Hey, Drew Scott here.
And I'm Jonathan Scott, reminding you that life's better with a home policy from American Family Insurance. They can help you get just the right protection at just the right price and help you save when you bundle home and auto. Kind of like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. It'll be just right for you. We love a custom build. American Family Insurance. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Where Brooklyn at? Where Brooklyn at?
What's up, everyone? My name is Najee Adams, and I'm one half of the dynamic hosting duo of the Hoopball Next podcast right here in the Hoopball Podcast Network. Myself, along with my best friend Hunter Jacobs, cover everything about New York's best basketball team. Sorry, Knicks fans. Join us as we journey into a new era of Nets basketball with superstars Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant while having a whole lot of fun along the way. As your one-stop shop for all things Nets, we've got it all. From their title odds next season all the way to what we think their NBA 2K rating should be. Just two native New Yorkers talking about Brooklyn hoops. What could be better? Swing us a follow at Hoopball Nets on Twitter and subscribe to the show everywhere that podcasts can be found. We've got Brooklyn grit. Come show us you do too.
The following is a Hoop Bowl presentation.
Guys, welcome back. It is I, Lyle Swithenbank, back with another installment of the Pelican Scoop. I hope everyone's going well on your, Wednesday Perth time. I suppose might be Wednesday morning when this comes out. We're back. The Pels, they've had a win today. We are joined by a very special co-host, I reckon. We'll go with the title. David Williams from Hoopball Grizz. How you going, mate?
Good, man. Well, it could be better, you know, if the Grizz had won this game, but going all right.
Well, I mean, I'm on cloud nine, as you can imagine, but it wasn't all good news after the Pels game. Well, we're going to be talking about that today. That's going to be some good fun breaking down the game and talking about all the fallout from thereafter, I guess, especially from the Memphis camp. What did you think of the game overall? I mean, result aside, I thought it was a pretty hard fought match.
It really was. You know, the Pels led the majority of the way, but there was a lot of times when I felt like the Pelicans could have put it away, and the Grizzlies just, one thing that they've done, the young Grizzlies team all year, is that they've continued to fight, you know, like the grind city is, you know, they're living up to that, right? You know, it's not the same style as the old grit and grind Grizzlies, but these guys, they don't give up. So, you know, even when they were down, they were still trying to fight to bring it back. And the Pelicans, specifically for me, one of the things that I picked out in the game was the time management for Zion. He was, you know, the Pelicans were doing great when he was on the floor, and that, you know, not they were doing awful at any point really, but they were doing great when he was on the floor, and they took him out and let him rest a little bit and then let him come back in to close the game. So that was, I think that was extremely important, because when Zion was off of the floor, and I hate to give him that much credit, but when he was off of the floor, the Grizz were kind of clawing their way back into it.
Yeah, and they've been talking about that throughout the last, I suppose, the bubble resumption, is this burst management. I'd never heard of the phrase. I suppose it's a bit of a buzzword, so they can explain it. And they've been talking about with Zion that they were going to play him in, I suppose, bursts. So he play 3 or 4 minutes and then he comes off it, so that he doesn't exert himself, from all reports. Because he had the 13 days out of the bubble, he went out of the bubble for personal reasons, I think family emergency. He didn't get all of the scrimmages and then the I suppose trainings and the like and the 5-on-5 that the rest of the team got. And what the sports scientists had come out and said, and the medical staff, is that we're not going to play him continuously. We don't want to overexert him, because what will happen is that he'll break down. That seems to be the reading between the lines report, is that they'll play him, overplay him, and then ruin him for the future. You know, he's the key piece for this team going forward. And
sure.
if we overplay him now in this bubble, where really are we a chance to win the finals? I don't think so. And I don't think many teams many people would agree with us. I mean, yeah, we're having a good crack. We might make playoffs, but we're definitely not going to come out of the West. Happy to be corrected. But, you know, for him, he's the piece for the next 10, 15 years. So, well, fingers crossed. And, yeah, we ruin him after 21 games. Well, yeah, more fool us, I guess.
It's not worth it. And that's that was the one thing that there were a lot of Grizz Twitter. They kept kind of taking cheap shots at the Pels. They're like, there's something shady going on with this whole Zion situation. And I'm like, it's not shady. It's not shady at all. He's the franchise player. The Pelicans, more than likely, the Grizzlies as well, but the Pelicans more than likely are not going to win it all this year, just like you said. Why risk? He's coming in. He has a lot of hype, and deservedly so. Like he is a phenomenal athlete, but why risk the future? You saw Lonzo Ball and Brandon Ingram have giant leaps forward this year, and you can only expect that, you know, Zion comes out and he's producing right out of the gate, that you're going to see growth from him going into next season. And so your young core is looking really good. Why risk the entire future by pushing him back too early? Because he's not going to be, you know, they say that you can be in shape but not in basketball shape, and that's accurate, you know, like the up and down and start and stop and jumping, all of that. No matter what you're doing in the gym, you're not getting those same motions. And he hadn't had that for, you know, what are we, 4+ months into the shutdown and up until this point?
Basketball fitness is completely different. I completely agree. And, you know, we got photos of Zion and he looked absolutely jacked. But pumping weights and running on a treadmill is not 5-on-5 basketball fitness. It doesn't matter who you are. You know, everyone's going to come out rusty. And those scrimmages were there on purpose so that these guys could get their eye in, get the rust out, and improve. And, you know, when you miss those, that was a good chance for him to get some 5-on-5 practice. And unfortunately, he missed them. And, you know, I can see why they're not rushing. You hit the nail on the head. I think, yeah. We'll see him for years to come. The guy's, 20 years old? Mm-hmm. We don't want to burn him out in this weird bubble experiment. Yeah. When really we're not number one seed. We're not going to be close to number one seed. And we might not even get in the playoffs. You know, the Portland Trailblazers are absolutely on a tear. So they're probably standing between us as well as the Grizz. The Grizz are still standing firm in that 8 spot for now. So, you know, there's a few different teams that are probably in a more prime position to get in there at the moment than we are. So, yeah, I mean, I can see their cautiousness with it.
Yeah. If the shoe was on the other foot, if it was Ja Morant and the Grizzlies were trying to catch the Pelicans and Ja is coming back, for me, as much as I want to watch Ja play and I want to see the Grizzlies make the playoffs, if we need him to recover, I'd rather him just set out and recover, get better. I want you to come back strong for next year. There's no way that I want to risk the entire future of a first round draft pick just to, you know, basically be sacrificed to the Los Angeles Lakers in the first round. I have zero interest in that at all. So I would love for the Grizzlies to get there. I'd love for them to get it, but not at the risk of an entire career of one of the young guys.
Absolutely. I mean, it's lambs to the slaughter, really, against this Lakers side. I mean, even I think Portland's probably the only team that really might challenge them based on all the players that they've got back. They're a playoff side, I truly believe, fully healthy, and getting Jusuf Nurkić back has been a huge boost for them, Zach Collins as well. So, I mean, for Pelicans, we've got a whole heap of guys that are 22 years old and younger. You know, your prime isn't until you're 26, 27, 28. These guys can grow together. That's a team where you go, all right, these guys are dangerous. Let's keep them all together. But Memphis is exactly the same. Whole heap of young guys. Now's not the time. I think Pels and and Grizz are going to be the two that really have these meteoric rises up the standings in years to come.
The next few years with these two teams, it's going to be fun to watch. It really is, because of the young core. You know, for Memphis, you have Brandon Ja, Jaren, Dylan, whether he's there or not, you know, De'Anthony Melton. There's a lot of young guys in this core. And then, you know, the Pelicans are the same way with, you know, Josh Hart, Zion, Lonzo, and Brandon Ingram. And, you know, like, I don't know how much, because I haven't watched a ton of Pelicans this year, but how much has Nickeil Alexander-Walker played this year? Has he put in a lot of minutes, and what's he looking like?
So he's a handy player. I mean, his summer league, I think, overhyped him. And coming into the season, that was something everyone was like, yep, he's going to contribute straight away. He's like Shai Gilgeous-Alexander from the Thunder. He's his cousin. So there was all this hype. They were comparing him already. He's the same sort of size, same sort of length. And he was an up and down. I mean, he was a rookie. So, you know, he had these flashes of brilliance. And then otherwise, he had some absolutely terrible moments. And that, I think, really shook his confidence. From all reports, he follows JJ Redick around like a glove. He is just absorbing how to be in the league. And, yeah, I spoke to a few of the beat writers and the like who cover the Pelicans a bit more closely than I do. And they were saying that this guy is just absorbing everything. He's learning from them. In the scrimmages, we saw a whole heap of Nickeil, and he looked good. You know, he looked confident. Some of his shots are understandably a bit rushed, and you know, he overplays it a little bit, but he was running the point. He looked like he was comfortable out there against NBA veterans, and, you know, I think he's going to be all right. I think there's a lot of people out on him, but for me, I think he's going to be okay, and I think he's going to be a solid contributor. You know, I watched the Clippers game where we got absolutely destroyed. Nickeil got a lot of minutes because it was a lot of garbage time for the most part. We're down by 40 at one point. And Mark Jackson was the commentator on the TNT schedule, and he said, well, Frank Jackson and Nickeil Alexander-Walker look like guys that could be contributors in an NBA team for years to come, you know. And that's huge props for these guys that are really in the infancy of their careers. You know, point guards don't learn their craft overnight, especially not NBA point guards. I mean, Ja Morant might be the exception. He's pretty handy. But for the most part, it takes a bit of time to play both sides of the ball and run an NBA team. So, you know, I have a lot of confidence in Nickeil, and I think he's going to be pretty handy going forward. I mean, JJ Redick teaching him, that's not a bad mentor to have.
Yeah, that's a guy that's, you know, you hear about his work ethic and what he does. And, you know, he's been in the league for a while, and he's been successful. You know, he's definitely a good one to have around, you know, for the young guys. And that's what you need. The Grizzlies had that kind of at the beginning of the season, and trade deadline moved that. But it worked out okay. They're still in good shape. With the injury to Jaren Jackson, that's a huge, huge loss. So, you know, the forecast for the rest of the season is not looking all that great. But this season, to me, you know, I said it on my last podcast, and I'll say it, even if the Grizzlies miss the playoffs at this point, this has been a successful season. They won more games in a shortened season than what they were projected to win in a full season. They're a young team that's, you know, they're overachieving early, and it's good to have this much success early. It, you know, they're playing games right now that are meaningful games, that it's a fight, that, you know, you're not going to put somebody down 25 and they're just going to give up. You put down somebody, you know, you get up 25 on somebody, they're going to fight. There's going to be runs, and it's good for them to have this type of experience.
100%. And these young teams, you know, these guys are rebuilding. Both teams are in rebuilding. I think it might have been you that tweeted it, actually. You said this is the first year of a rebuild. They've overachieved. You know, this is a team that is sitting in the eighth spot, the Memphis being that, who were meant to just completely rebuild a team with a whole heap of young guys, and all of a sudden you've made the playoffs. The expectation is that these guys are going to continue to grow. If this is year one, what does year five look like? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
so
yeah,
it's exciting. These guys shouldn't be in contention. That's the whole thing, is that people are now like, oh, it's Grizzlies to lose, and you know, they've got everything against them. But it's still been a pretty good season. If I'm, you know, I have a real affection for the Grizzlies, and I think they've had a pretty good year. I mean, Pelicans as well. But, you know, you're pretty happy for a team to achieve as they have.
Sure. Yeah. I actually, that was a retweet, Joe from Grizzly Bear Blues. He's the one who tweeted that out. But yeah, I saw it and I'm like, yeah, that's it. That's exactly right. It's easy to forget that this is the first year of a rebuild because of how much success they had. And, you know, I love to see that as a fan base, the Grizzlies fans, we get to be so invested in this team already and invested in the wins and losses when they really shouldn't matter because we're, you know, it's the first year of a rebuild. But because of how much success they've had already, we're invested in it. We want to win every time. We want to make the playoffs. That there's a man, it is. If the teams read social media, like if they're on social media and they're looking, and obviously, you know, they're not following all of these little accounts or whatever, but you know, like if they see some of these tweets, I'm just like, oh man, cause you know, it's one game, they love a guy, and the very next game, it's like, get him out of town. And that drives me nuts, man. You know, I hate that so much that people give up on these young guys so fast. It doesn't take much at all. There was he tweeted out that the foul trouble for Jaren Jackson was going to be a career long thing, and he had basically given up on him already. And then the two games out, yeah, he got in trouble in the scrimmages, but the two games after, like the last two games, he's done well. And he did struggle. He has struggled with foul issues, but he'd have long stretches during the season where he wasn't having that issue. And so it does, when it pops up, it seems like it comes in bunches, but I don't think that it's going to be a career long thing. I think he's 20 years old and he wants to be an elite defender. And so he's making mistakes and it, like I say, it just, infuriating to watch people flip-flop on these guys as much as they do.
And I mean, they're more than happy to celebrate when he has a massive block. You know, like these defensive plays, it takes time to learn how to play NBA defenses. These guys that are charging down the lane at you, they're not slouches. They're not college players. They're not high school players. These are the best of the best in the whole world. So, you know, I think it's tough to get on these 20-year-olds and expect all of these, you know, the all-star levels at 20 years old. I think that's, especially for big men, it takes a bit of time to develop. I mean, have a look at another big man at Memphis, Valanciunas. You know, at the Raptors, he was always in trouble with his fouls. He was, you know, in and out of lineups. He started, he was in the bench, and they're saying, this guy has all the tools, but he can't put them together. All of a sudden, what is he now, 26 or 27? He's playing really, really good basketball. And I think that is a completely perfect example as to what these young big men can become. You know, the Pelicans, we've got Jackson Hayes, exactly the same thing. This guy was meant to have a redshirt year. All of a sudden, he's playing because Derek Favors goes out with injury and he had some personal things going in his life as well. I don't think it's fair to rule these young blokes out. You know, another guy that I've seen from the Memphis side of things is Dylan Brooks. Why are people getting on him so hard? I think he's a good player. I think he's pretty handy.
It's mostly shot selection. You know, he's not played well essentially since he signed his contract. Since in January, he was on fire. He had a really, really good January. He signed a 3-year contract. And then after that, he kind of fell off the face of the earth, man. He just is not, he's had a game here or there. But one of the things that he does that is an issue, but it's not the biggest issue with the team, is he will pull up from three and not even really a clean look all the time, really, really early in the shot clock. And in the Blazers game, especially, not this game, you know, they were playing from behind for the majority of the Pelicans game, but in the Blazers game, they were playing with a lead late, and he would come down early in the shot clock and just jack up a three, and people were just letting him have it. And that's, you know, I love Dillon Brooks on the defensive end. I like him overall as a player, and I wasn't really giving him, yes, he was making bad decisions, but it wasn't upsetting me as much as it was the other people. But he's not afraid. He's not scared on the defensive end, and he has supreme confidence on the offensive end that he can score on anybody, or he can score at any time. And so he can attack the basket. He can shoot it from outside. He just hasn't been doing that. And his numbers have been pretty awful. And it's, you know, like the Grizzlies as a whole, in the bubble games, they're shooting 28% as a team from three. And it's a really low number, but they're really right around where they were in the regular season as far as like overall in the regular season, they were at 34% and they were around the bottom 10 of the league. And then, you know, at 28%, obviously, you know, they're going to be in the bottom three out of the 22 teams that are in the bubble. So it's more than just Dillon Brooks, but he was just the scapegoat. He was the easy one. Okay, we have the lead against the Blazers. He comes down, jacks up a three. Blazers go down and score. Comes down again, jacks up another three. And it's, you know, 5 or 6 seconds into the shot clock. And so a lot of people just started throwing heat his way. And that's been kind of the case all year with him. He will just make bad decisions. And I think that Taylor Jenkins said that he had a talk with him, and he was better in the Pelicans game. He still had a couple where he pulled it maybe a little bit too early, but he was making better decisions and being a little bit smarter. And I think he gets tunnel vision a lot. He will drive to the basket and there'll be somebody wide open in the corner, and he doesn't always see it because he's so focused on getting to the rim. So that's something, you know, not everybody has vision. You know, John Moran, if he's making that same drive, he's going to see the guy in the corner. He's going to kick it across so they can, you know, get the wide open three. Dillon Brooks is not there. He's just not. And so he ended up being just a scapegoat for everything that was going wrong with the Grizzlies.
Yeah, it makes it tough. You know, these young guys, I understand, yeah, the shot selection and the like, and that happens with young guards. You know, they get a bit excited. I mean, we've seen it at the Pels. Frank Jackson's perfect example. Another guy that likes to overuse the ball in the bubble, admittedly, he's been pretty good. But I feel for these guys. I mean, if I was getting criticized as a 24-year-old, at my job, I'd be feeling pretty rough about it. But you know, these guys are, I suppose, professional athletes, and they've got to play to the system, and they've got to improve. And so hopefully Dillon Brooks snaps out of the up down sort of offensive game that he's had, and puts it all together. I mean, on the defensive end, he's pretty handy. He's guarded some of the big players throughout the journey. We've got Josh Hart that does the same thing off the bench at the Pels. And I think the defense first mentality for a lot of guys is something that not all players have, but I do enjoy seeing it with a few of the guys.
Yeah, I think Josh Hart and Dillon Brooks are really comparable players in kind of their play style, and that, you know, both of them work hard on the defensive end. And, you know, I think Josh Hart, they were talking about it. I was listening to the game and listening to the announcers, and the Pels announcers were talking about how he's kind of adopted the defensive and rebounding role, even, you know, from the guard position, and how since he's done that, his offense is kind of just, it came along, you know, you put in the work shooting the ball, but he was struggling. And then when he just said, you know, okay, I'm going to focus on defense and rebounding, the offense just is kind of flowing for him a little bit better now. And maybe it's not every game. And like I said, you definitely know more about that than me, but it seemed, you know, watching the game and watching the few Pelicans games that I had this year, I think those two are really, really comparable in their play style and what they do. I feel like Josh Hart may make better decisions overall than Dylan Brooks, but don't know for sure, man. And I go back to the youth. Dylan Brooks is kind of, you know, he's been in the league for a little bit now, but he's not an old guy. You know, it's not like he's a 7 or 8 year veteran. He's played just over 2 seasons worth of games. He's been in the league 3 years, but just over 2 seasons worth of games with injuries and stuff. And so some of the mistakes he's making is just from lack of experience. And a lot of people are ready to give up on him. A lot of the fans are ready to give up on him. And, you know, let's just trade him and send him out and bring in Zach LaVine, or, you know, plug in any kind of dynamic shooting guard that can score off the dribble and shoot the three. And they're ready to send Dylan Brooks out in a package to get somebody else. I still think Dylan can be the guy. I just, he has work to do.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, Zach LaVine would be an interesting addition to that team. He would be that dynamic scoring guard, but he needs a ball in his hands. And I think Jar does as well. So, you know, you give up complementary pieces like a Dylan Brooks or something like that and bring in a guard that likes the ball. Are you then eating into Ja Morant's development? You know, these are all things that I think people like the flashy names and don't think of the whole team building. That's not a knock on people. You know, people want to see the stars and people want to see the exciting players, especially the casual fan. But you need to build a team that is going to work together. And I think, you know, Dylan Brooks, was he 22, 23 years old? I think he's still got a lot of development. He signed a 3-year deal. I'd like to see what our conversation is going to be like in 3 years when we see that perhaps he turns into at least a solid defender and I think a solid two-way guard. He might not be an all-star, but you've already got two potentials there with JJJ and Morant. So a third one, you'd just be being greedy.
Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me at all at some point if Brandon Clark turns into an all-star.
And he's a gun.
you want to see your guys improve, and you would love it if you had more than two all-stars. But I say it's a little bit greedy because you don't see that. It's unless it is guys kind of stars moving from team to team, joining other teams. It's not very common that you see 3 all-stars on one team. So if the Grizzlies end up developing 3 all-stars, you know, great. That's good for Grizz fans, good for the team, good for the coaching staff, because that means they're doing something correct in developing. But, I don't know, man. I don't know that I don't know that Brooks will ever be an all-star, but I think that he will be a key piece moving forward for the Grizzlies. And I think that he can fulfill the role that the Grizzlies, a lot of Grizzlies fans feel like they're missing. He just needs a little more time to develop.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, JJJ does as well. Morant does. Zion does. Lonzo Ball does. You know, these guys, 22 years old, we're going to be talking about some of these guys in some pretty esteemed, air of esteem, I guess, in the coming years. You know, some of these guys are going to be all right. Brandon Ingram, for us, you know, he was sort of written off a bit at the Lakers. Some guys really liked him. Other people were like, well, he's not that good. But you play next to LeBron. I mean, is anyone good by comparison? He's pretty handy, old LeBron. But, you know, you bring him down to the Pelicans, you give him, I don't know, 20 shots a game, let him be the guy, put the ball in his hand, and all of a sudden he develops into arguably the most improved player of the year. And an all-star. So it's just a wait-and-see approach. You know, guys take a bit of time to develop, and it'll be interesting to see how these teams, I suppose, turn out. You know, I want to see these guys all together in 4 years where they're all sitting at 26 years old, and I want to see the Pelicans and the Grizzlies in the Western Conference Finals, I think.
I want to see a... Like, for me, I like the games on Christmas. I want to see the Grizzlies play on Christmas. That's, for me, that's like a goal. Obviously, Western Conference Finals, that would be great. That's bigger than the Christmas Day game, but I would like to see a head-to-head between these two. And I think with, you know, the star power that you have between the two teams moving forward, I think that that is something that is likely to happen.
It'll probably happen this year. I think the way they have, or the broadcasters have this infatuation with Zion, I think that ESPN will be all over that, and they'll be trying to get him in there. Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me at all, especially at Ja Morant, number one, number two. They're trying to build this rivalry, but they seem to just be friends. So they're not really getting the fierce rivalry that they were looking for, more a few guys hugging out. And I love that photo of the two guys hugging afterwards and chatting together. Yeah. I think that's a camaraderie that if you don't play in the NBA, you don't really get to experience firsthand. So, yeah, I think that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, and Ja, he has multiple times, you know, he's mentioned, like, those guys have supported each other. And that's, you know, Zion, when he's asked about the Rookie of the Year, you know, he said, hey, Ja's went out there and he's done what he's needed to do in order to deserve the award. Obviously, I want to win it, but if he wins it, he's done what he needed to do. And so he's kind of giving him props there. And, you know, that picture of those two together, Ja Morant tweeted out something along the lines of, you know, as much as the media wants it to be a rivalry, it'll be nothing but love between the two of us because we're like brothers.
Yeah, for sure. These guys, they're growing up together, aren't they? They were put in the same boat by all of these external forces, and now they're forever going to be linked, I guess. Pick one, pick two of a draft where both of them are transcendent talents. It's pretty exciting to see. I don't think we've seen a 1-2 relationship, I suppose, as well. Both going in the same conference, both playing each other, four times a year. Plus, if we made playoffs, we'd be playing even more. You know, I think it's exciting, and I think these two guys are going to be household names. I mean, they already sort of are fringe household names. Zion definitely is, just from the publicity, and I think most people know who Ja Morant is as well. I know I'm all over him. I think he's awesome. So, you know, these guys are going to be a couple of all-stars that we're talking about, like we talk about LeBron and Dwayne Wade and Carmelo Anthony and all these guys that have done it before.
Yeah, absolutely agree. Man, what was – so coming into this game, both teams were 0-2. I know for the Grizzlies, I tweeted about it and I talked about, you know, they're not shooting the ball that well. Their field goal percentage has dropped. They're not rebounding the ball as well, and they're fouling more. That was three things that the Grizzlies were kind of struggling with in the bubble. But what would you say, like the Pelicans and their two losses prior to the Grizzlies game, what would you say their biggest issue was?
Settling for jumpers. I think the hero ball, when you get up against it, guys try to take it upon themselves to try to make a bucket. And I understand that. But then the ball sticks, and we played best when we can move the ball quickly and get up and down the court. There was a perfect play in the Memphis game where Lonzo threw it. He got the rebound and threw it from the key of one, or from the paint of one end, and hit Drew Holiday at the other end, who then laid it in with an and one. If we move the ball quickly, we score. The half court sets, our half court offense gets hammered, and if we have to play slow, we don't play well. And I think that's what the Clippers were perfect at, is that they had a switching defense that we just couldn't exploit. And, you know, to get beaten by, I mean, we should have lost by 40 points. We won by 20 against the Clippers. Lost by 20 against the Clippers. We didn't deserve. That was the bench that dragged us back in garbage time. 26 or points or whatever it was not, should not have been the final score. And we're lucky that that was all it was. Because we look stagnant. So that was one thing I think is the hero ball, the lack of movement. Number two was not getting the defensive rebound, not finishing the play. And I harp on it every episode, and people probably get sick of it, but your defensive play doesn't stop until you secure the rebound. And that was something I think we did better against the Memphis Grizzlies, but we hadn't done previously. We're getting killed. We got killed by guys like Zubac from Clippers, and then before that at the Jazz, Rudy Gobert turned the whole game. So we can't rely on someone else to grab the ball. You know, it can't be the guards. Derek Favors has to clunk that. And it will Jackson Hayes when he comes on. And they're not huge rebounding guys, but they're guys that definitely need to do that. I guess that's probably the two main ones. Also, not relying on someone else to get it done. So there's been times where we relied on JJ Redick. He come off the bench and there was he was huge in the Utah game. I think he had 21 points. And guys that aren't always considered, I suppose, the number one option, whether that be, we can't wait for someone else to make a move. You know, if Zion is going to be the guy and he's only playing 3 minutes bursts, we can't expect him to have 30 points to win us a game. And I think sometimes the rest of the team goes, oh, B.I. will go and get us a bucket, or Zion will go and get us a bucket. And I don't think that is something that we should do going forward. I think everyone needs to be accountable and everyone needs to make a bucket. You know, Lonzo is more than capable to play as a lead scorer as well and a facilitator. And if he's not on, well, we can't then just go and say, oh, Lonzo's not on, we're not going to win. So I think the guys really need to step up with that and all be accountable. Accountability, that's the word I'm looking for. Everyone needs to be accountable.
Yeah, I know B.I. had a big fourth. He played very well to close out the game, and that was you know the defense on him was solid, but it was just better offense. You know, they were contesting the shots, and he's just so long. Like, his frame reminds me a ton of Kevin Durant, and you know, when you and I have been doing shows before, I think I said that, you know, he's just long, and unless you have somebody, you know, if the Grizzlies had Jaren Jackson guarding him, and I don't know that Jaren is quick enough to stick with him. Maybe he is, but they don't really have anybody on defense that has the length that can really, really contest his shot because of his build. And so he was putting in work in the fourth, and you definitely have a lot of offensive weapons. The game that I went to down in New Orleans around New Year's, Lonzo had a 20-point triple-double down there. It was crazy. I was super upset because my kid loves the Rockets. He loves Russell Westbrook, and Westbrook does not play when he comes to Memphis. We've been to a ton of games, and he just sets out. And I'm like, okay, we're going to New Orleans. The Rockets are playing the Pelicans. We'll get to see him down there. And like the entire Rockets team was setting out. It was crazy how many people were setting out in that game. And it was around the time that it was possible that Zion was going to come back. And so I was kind of hoping maybe that would happen. And then obviously he didn't come back till later, but they were teasing that off and on. And so that would have been good, but we got to see Lonzo Ball put up a triple double. So that was a good thing, but he's definitely, like you say, he's more than capable. A lot of it depends on if his jump shot has fallen.
Yeah, and I mean, his knock earlier on in his career was that he had a silly-looking jump shot, and it just was clunky. He rebuilt it in the off-season, probably took a month and a half to really get his legs under him, and then it started falling. And statistically, he was playing as a like top 10 point guard in the league, which, you know, when you mention Lonzo Ball, you get all of the oh, his dad this, and oh, you know, he's pass first and he shoots from his hip. But he actually turned into an absolute beast for a stretch. And I think I credit him as part of the reason that we were in the position to actually finish, what, eighth or ninth or tenth and get into this bubble. You know, we looked like we were on a real tear before the hiatus hit. Credit to him, I guess. It's pretty handy.
Yeah. Yeah, he definitely gets more hate than what he deserves, and a lot of that, I think, stems from his dad and the type of attitude and stuff that he brings whenever somebody puts a microphone in front of him. The good news is, you know, there's not been a lot of people put microphones in front of him, and New Orleans is not nearly the stage that Los Angeles is, so there's not as many opportunities for that. But Lonzo's always been a soft-spoken guy and just kind of goes out and lets his game do the talking.
Yeah, for sure. And I think moving out of the spotlight of LA has helped him. I mean, he's no longer getting hounded all the time because LeBron's there and, you know, he's had a chance to actually be an anonymous, I guess, to a degree, NBA player, which I think as a young guy, you appreciate. It's not until you become the high-profile guys where everything is scrutinized that it really, the business side of things comes into play, and how you deal with things really affects you more. You know, he never had that chance to be the anonymous young bloke who got to develop his own star power. His dad sort of forced it on him by all the carry-on and circus that he brought with all of the media stuff and the Big Baller brand and building this brand himself. You know, I think Lonzo's a good player, and I think he's another guy that we should definitely look at re-signing and making sure that that core stays together, because I like to see him play, and he works well with Zion. He just throws the ball up there, and Zion or Jackson Hayes get up there and get hold of it, which I think is pretty exciting. I like.
Yeah, there was one play in particular that the Grizzlies made a three and then didn't get back, and Zion got behind the defense, and Lonzo just throws a dart to Zion. And I'm like, man, I know you guys watch film on this team. Like, the Grizzlies, you've watched film on the Pelicans. Why are you, like, why is he behind the defense? Why are you not back? But, you know, it was great vision by Lonzo, an excellent pass. And then, you know, Zion, his athleticism, man, if you chuck the ball, it seems like 20 feet in the air and he's going to get up there and get it, you know, because he's so explosive. But, you know, it was frustrating on the part that, you know, I'm a Grizzlies fan. I want the Grizzlies to win. And then they don't get back after a three and the Pelicans get an easy bucket. But from a basketball aspect, I can respect the play because of the difficulty of the pass and then Zion being able to get up there and get it and throw it down after that.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, he makes these passes that just you don't think anyone else can make at all, which I just really appreciate. I mean, it's good to have a guy like that on your team, that especially with the jumpers that we have, the athletic guys that we have. You know, it's probably time to, I suppose, plug the sponsors. MyBookie.ag have been helping us over at Hoopball. So make sure, guys, if you're doing your sports betting, whether it's Memphis or Pelicans or anyone else, you're over at MyBookie.ag. If you bet and they win, then they pay. So make sure you're all over those guys. Another sponsor we have here as well is the guys at Manscaped.com. If you've seen my glorious moustache on Twitter, you know that I don't have one, but I definitely have one on back order. The Lawnmower 3.0, go and get it. It is an absolute beast. Use the code HOOPBALL20 for that, and at my book, you use the code HOOPBALL to sign up. And they support all of us here, so make sure you go and support them and look after us, because we can't put all these together without their assistance. So, yeah, it's been good. David, so what's the prediction going forward for the Memphis Grizzlies?
Losing Jaren hurts quite a bit. I'd still like to see him make it, just because I really don't want to see Lillard make the playoffs, to be honest. I will probably get shot by Grizzlies fans, but I would rather see the Pelicans make it than the Blazers.
Good man.
Just because like I really, Damian Lillard, I like his game. I like what he does on the floor, but the amount of whining and crybaby stuff that he does off of the floor just irks me. And so I kind of just don't want to see them make it, but it doesn't look good. You know, the Grizzlies, Tyus Jones is out with the knee injury. Don't know how long he's going to be out. He's going to be reevaluated today, I believe, which I don't expect him to be back today. I don't know There was not a lot said about the severity of the injury with him being reevaluated in a week. I wouldn't think that it was something major, but, you know, you're missing Tyus Jones, and that's a huge, I didn't realize how much difference that was going to make, but there were so many times. DeAnthony Melton is a guy that he does very, very well working off of Tyus Jones, and Melton has been essentially non-existent in this bubble with Tyus Jones being out. Just hasn't played well. He hadn't been himself. So missing Tyus Jones, and then obviously, you know, you're one or two offensive threat, kind of depending on how you want to look at it. The best shooter on the team for sure, and Jaren Jackson, huge defensive presence. I think because of where the Grizzlies are at in standings, they, you know, if they win a couple games, they're still going to be in the play-in. But I don't know, man. You know, if I'm betting on it, I'm not gonna. I don't like their odds right now. You know, missing two pieces, and we'll see. I would think that the Grizzlies PR would let us know something today on Tyus. You know, like give us an estimate of when he's going to be back, but I don't know. Rest of the season doesn't look good. It does give them a chance. That you got to play for it, though. Whether you like, so if they make it, if they don't make it, whatever. The chance for a top pick doesn't change any from where they're at. You know, if they finish ninth or if they finish 11th, right? So it doesn't matter. Like, your percentages for a top pick don't change. So you play to win here. There's no, like, you don't throw the games or anything like that. You go out there, you play to win, you try to make the playoffs just to burst somebody else's bubble and go from there. Gear up for next year, let Jaren get healthy, and, you know, if they do fall out of the playoffs, maybe they get lucky in the draft and end up in the top few picks. I know it's only protected top four this year. Anything outside of the top four picks goes to Boston. So, yeah, I am not very optimistic whenever it comes down to it based off of what the Grizzlies have lost. So what about you? What do you think? You think the Pels can build some momentum coming off of this win against the Grizzlies and maybe fight their way in there?
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, going forward, sorry, thing on mute. going forward, I mean, I think the Pelicans hopefully can build a bit of momentum. You know, they've got a fairly steady schedule going forward. You know, the first two games, I think, were going to be the most difficult. I think Memphis were going to test us as well, which they did. But pulling that win out, I think from now on, we need to win every game going forward. I mean, the Portland Trailblazers are on an absolute tear. I don't know if we're going to be able to be better than them and be able to trigger the play-in at least with Memphis. But it's just all up in the air at the moment. You know, I think we're healthy. I think Zion's building. I think if we drop another game, it'll change everything. But, yeah, as long as we're winning, fingers crossed we can make it into the playoffs. Otherwise, yeah, it'll be a good learning, I suppose, team-building opportunity for everyone to get together and grow together. And then next year, I suppose, we gear up and hopefully get a healthy season out of everyone.
Yeah, you know, projected strength of schedule or whatever for the Pelicans is, you know, kind of, it's on the lower end, which it was for them to finish the season. But if you look at it, it's not really all. You play Sacramento on Thursday, and the Kings are one of the teams that are fighting for that spot. So,
yeah, they're playing well.
Yeah, you know, they could have, they probably should have beat the Mavs yesterday and just, found a way to lose that game. You play them twice and you play the Spurs. So three out of your final five games are against teams that are fighting for the same spot that you're going after. It's definitely not a cakewalk. I think if the Pelicans come out and they beat the Kings in this first game, it kind of puts the Kings in almost an impossible spot as far as jumping over them. So the second game should become easier at that point. But you never know. Like, they got a game against the Wizards, follow, you know, they go back to back Kings and then Wizards after that. Wizards is a game that the Pelicans should definitely win. The Wizards are, you know, they're minus Beal, Wall, Bertans. It's just, it's a bunch of young guys playing for the Wizards. But the Nets-Bucks game is a perfect example of you can't overlook any of these games, and especially when they mean something. When you have to win, you can't take it easy on any of these games. So one thing that I'm going to be watching moving forward for the Pelicans is kind of what they do with Zion and how he gets into it, because the game against the Grizzlies shows, you know, when he's in there to close the game, it really changes things for them because it gives them another option. You don't just have, you know, you've got Ingram and Drew Holiday and Lonzo Ball. You have those guys, but Zion just brings kind of another presence on the floor to just team up with that. And he definitely helped them close the Grizzlies game out. So I'm going to be watching for that. Grizzlies, theirs looks tough on paper, but they finish with the top three teams in the East, which their positions are going to be locked basically by the time the Grizzlies play them. So they could very well steal one or two of those games and force the play in.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm excited to see how it all plays out. David, I'd like to thank you for your time today. I think we've had another good one. Look, we've done pretty well. Where can we find you? It's at dwill2111, am I right, on Twitter?
That is correct, yeah. And the show is at Hoopball Grizz. Appreciate you having me on doing this co-show together.
Yeah, it's been great.
And maybe the Pels and the Grizz meet up again in this play-in. We'll see. I would much rather it, not just because you're on the show, but just because of my extreme dislike of Damian Lillard. I would much rather see the Pelicans in than the Blazers at this point. So
for sure, we could be doing it again in a couple of weeks. But as always, I'm at Lyle Swithenbank, at Hoopball Pels is the show as well. Mate, it is always a pleasure catching up with you. Make sure you stay safe, and I reckon we pack her up.
All right, sounds good, man.
All right, mate. Take it easy.
This has been a HoopBall presentation.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get 1-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.